So an interesting thing to think about sometimes, and I really don't mean this in any sort of a racist way at all, but an interesting thing to think about is to talk about the differences between Jews and non-Jews. What are the differences between Jews and non-Jews? You may have noticed that there are some differences between Jews and non-Jews. You may have picked up on that. And just understand kind of the root of that, where that comes from, differences between a Jew and a non-Jew. So in Parshas Noach, we're introduced to non-Jews in an interesting way, because they're divided into categories. We don't just have one category of somebody who isn't Jewish. Obviously, all the B'nai Noach are not Jewish. In fact, the way we say somebody is not Jewish, one way to say it is to say, call them a Ben Noach. Okay, we're also B'nai Noach, but a Ben Noach usually means somebody that's not Jewish. But they're put into categories here. We all know the story that happened with Noach when he got drunk, etc. and so forth, and how the different children treated Noach differently. And then the Torah discusses the different children. So one thing that it says here, it says, Yafta l'kim l'yefes. So Yefes gets like a bracha, Yafta l'kim l'yefes, Yishkon ba'al l'shem. Shem is already on a different madrega. Shem, by the way, is also not Jewish, but we're derived from Shem, so we'll keep him as a separate category. We won't talk about him so much. But you have Yefes, is Yafta l'kim l'yefes, Yishkon ba'al l'shem. Yefes, the beauty of Yefes, of Yavan. There's something very, very beautiful about that. Yefes is considered one of the nice, the good sons of Noach. And then we have Cham, and Cham gets cursed. Cham gets cursed. It's a different type of a non-Jew. And just to me, it's interesting to try to figure out what the differences are between them and our relationship to them. I think if I ask the question in an honest moment, if I ask you guys a question in an honest moment, without thinking too deeply into it, and with nothing at stake, if I just asked you the question, what the difference is between a Jew and a non-Jew, I think, honestly, most people think that the difference between a Yid and somebody who's not is mitzvahs. So if we made an algebraic equation, non-Jew plus 613 equals Jew. If you have Tariq mitzvahs on top, I mean, he has 7 mitzvahs, so whatever 613 minus 7 is, right? Tariq mitzvahs, if you add Tariq mitzvahs to a non-Jew, then he becomes a Jew. So what are we? We're glorified goyim. That's what we are. We're goyim with mitzvahs. I think that's what most people would say. We have Torah, we have mitzvahs. A guy doesn't have Torah and mitzvahs. He has, again, his Sheva mitzvahs, Bnei Noach, but he doesn't have mitzvahs. Now, what's a Yid? A Yid is a guy, Baruch Hashem, Chasdei Hashem, we have mitzvahs. And that makes us different. But that's not true. It's not a true statement. It's not a true statement for a lot of reasons. I'm just going to bring you one reason, and this hit me. The reason I'm talking about this particular reason is that it hit me on Simchas Torah. I hope everybody understands that when you sing a niggun, when you dance hakafas, when you're at a wedding and you're dancing, when you're sitting at the Shabbos table in your shir room, wherever it happens to be, and you're really singing a niggun, there's work to do while you're singing. I don't mean to say that you shouldn't enjoy yourself. It's going to be very enjoyable to sing a niggun. It's a beautiful thing, but there's work to do. Because, just as an example, there's many levels of this, of the work that there is to do during while you're singing a niggun, but one of the things to do is to think about what the words mean as you're singing. And it's a very, very powerful thing, which today we've lost most of the way, which is to sing something many, many times. Usually what happens in most places is that you sing a song, maybe sing it once, maybe sing it twice. Then people are bored of it and they want to move on to the next song. What happens if you sing the song 15 times, 25 times? So what happens is, at the beginning you like the song, and then you start getting bored, and more bored, and sick of it. That's what happens. But if you keep singing through that, then what happens is, it has to be the right song, can't be the wrong song, can't be a song that you don't connect to at all, but at some point, the song becomes hypnotic. And then you get drawn into the song. Drawn into the words. And then it becomes like a Musar Seder. You become really affected by the song. The first time you sing it, it's beautiful or it's not beautiful, whatever it happens to be. But if anybody's ever gone to, a Chassidish Atish, someplace where they sing a song and they could sometimes sing the same song for 40 minutes over and over and over again, by the time you walk out of that room, it's in your bones. It's part of you now. It's part of you now. We don't have that type of dedication to a song. The song is supposed to be fun. It was good. We sang it once, maybe twice. Let's move on to the next song. We can fight about the next song, make sure we start it on the right key. That's basically the only thing that we have to worry about. But in Hakafas, a lot of times in Hakafas, we sing the same song many times. So I was sitting there during Hakafas and trying to think about the song as the songs were being sang, and it really had me, it was like a Musa Seder for me. Really, really, I felt like a big Aliyah from just sitting and dancing with the Torah, without the Torah. So one thing we say is Baruch Elokeinu Shabranu L'Chvardo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us. V'vdilanu min HaTorah V'nosan lanu Torah Semes. I mean, how many people sang that in Simchas Torah, right? V'vdilanu min HaTorah V'nosan lanu Torah Semes. The Torah are not the, it's not with the test. It's not people who make mistakes. It's the Torah with people who err. It's the people who are wandering around. People who are wandering around, that's the Torah. People who are, somebody who's Torah Baderach, means he's lost on the road. Somebody who's wandering around. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was hivdilanu min HaTorah, he separated us from those that were wanderers, v'nosan lanu Torah Semes, and he gave us the Torah. I noticed an interesting thing. I didn't notice it the first time I sang it, or the second time, or the third time. It was probably the 20th time, but after the 20th time, you start thinking about it and thinking about it again. It becomes a little bit hypnotic. I started realizing a little bit that the line that we're quoting, Baruch Elokeinu Shabranu L'Chvardo V'Hivdilanu Min HaTorah V'Nasan Lanu Torah Semes, it says Hivdilanu Min HaTorah, and then it says Nasan Lanu Torah Semes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu separated us and then gave us a Torah. Which means that the difference between us and the Goyim isn't the Torah. We have a more basic difference. After we were different, he then gave us a Torah. Hivdilanu min HaTorah, and then Nasan lanu Torah Semes. We're only shayach to a Torah because we're different. The Torah is not what made us different. Obviously, once we're different and we got a Torah, now we're really different. Now we got a Torah, and obviously that has a tremendous impact on us. But we were different before the Torah was given to us. We're different beforehand. Hivdi lanu min HaTorah, then nasan lanu Torah Semes. Maybe somebody will ask me a question, which is a good hashkafa question, which we're not going to talk about now. But why is that fair? Why is that fair? Why did he separate us and not somebody else? It's nepotism. He picked us. He's being unfair. That's a good question for a different day. But the bottom line is, that's the fact. HaKadosh Baruch Hu separated us. Which means, in a certain sense, that if you would have a Jew without Torah, Chas v'Shalom, that Jew is also different than a Goy. He's also different than a Goy. Because he's still part of Hivdilanu min HaTorah. I'm not talking about whether he's going to get punished. He's not going to get punished. That's not for me to decide. But he's different in kind because he's Hivdilanu min HaTorah. He was separated. He's different. So a Jew is not a Goy with mitzvahs. A Jew is different than a guy beforehand. And I want to explain to you why that's a difficult concept for us. Please understand me again. I'm not trying to be racist. I'm not saying you should walk around looking down through your nose at this. Yeah, you're just a guy. And I'm not talking about that. But just to understand, let's not look at the negative aspects of it, what they aren't. Let's just look at what we are. Look at what we are. There's something very, very special about us, which makes us shaykh to Torah. And they're not. And we have that. We should be proud of that. Instead of looking at what's bad about some other yeshiva, look about what's good about your yeshiva. You know what I mean? Instead of looking about what's bad about them, forget about that for the moment. Let's look about what's good about us, what we have. But you know why this makes us uncomfortable? I'll explain to you why this makes us uncomfortable. Uncomfortable maybe is the wrong word, but it's strange to us. It's a little bit strange to us. Any ben Torah, any yeshiva bachur who decides to start becoming serious about his Yiddishkeit, he decides to start becoming serious, look around, to become something a little bit more special than what he was. One of the first things that he does is he tries to start davening better, more seriously, with a little more concentration, a little more introspection. He starts to daven a little bit better. Davening is very, very hard for Americans. It's very difficult. And the reason why it's so difficult, there's a lot of reasons, but one reason why it's so difficult is because when we daven, what are we davening to? The answer is, of course, we know we're davening to Hashem. It's very simple. But I don't see Hashem, and I don't feel Hashem, and I don't touch Hashem. Someone told me that there's Hashem out there. I believe it absolutely, but I don't feel it. I don't see it. So when I'm talking, I'm davening, I don't know what I'm talking to. I'll tell you a terrible thing. What I'm about to say is a terrible thing. It's so terrible that I don't even know if I should really say this. But the only reason I'm saying it is because One of my Rebbeim said it to me, so I feel if he said it to me, then maybe I can say it to you. But it's, to me, a terrible thing to say. It's terrible. Okay, again, I'm almost wishing that I'm not saying it, but I'll just say it to you. Somebody said to me, he said, what would happen, I mentioned this to one of the shiurim, but what would happen if somebody, the piska, would come down in a shamayim and would say that there's no Yiddishkeit for today? What would you do on that day? Not a good question for Yeshiva Bacham to ask that question, but what would you do if there was no Yiddishkeit for today? What would you do? All kinds of people have different answers what they would do. Most of them we shouldn't talk about. This particular Rebbe said to me, what he would do is that he would go around, this is what he said, he would go around shutting off the machines of everybody who was on respirators, who were brain dead, etc. He would shut off all the machines. That's what he said he would do. Because the Torah says we can't do that. It's usher to do that. Chas v'shalom, he would never do that, but he doesn't understand it. And if he had a chance to be off, that's what he would do. That would be his chesed. He would go through the hospitals, Nebuch, the terrible wards in the hospital where people who are not going to recover are, and he would shut off all those machines. That's what he said. That's definitely not in my top 100 of the things that I would do. But that's what he said he would do. And then he said, you know what else he would do? And this is what I would say is terrible. That what I just said so far is terrible. But what he said that's really terrible is he said he would daven holding something. A picture, a statue, something. So that one time in his life he could daven to something. That's what he said he would do. Chas v'shalom, we would never. Chas v'shalom, obviously you can't do such a thing. But he said, if I would have a representation in my hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I could dive into that, it would make tefillah so much easier. I'm imagining all the averis I would do. He's imagining how he would do the mitzvahs and make them easier for himself. Okay, that's not me. But that's what he said. Right? Now, chas v'shalom, that's a terrible thing. It's a travesty. You can't do such a thing. That's avodah zarah. That's avodah zarah. But just think about it for a second. L'havdil, l'havdil, l'havdil. That's what the goyim do all day. Right? Whether they're holding a cross in their hands or something else in their hand, a statue in their hands, they have something to daven to. We don't. We daven to an idea. It's a very real idea. But that's very hard for us. Because for us, we live in Olam Hazeh. Olam Hazeh, we guys learning Bav Metzia, Olam Hazeh is Muchsuk. Right? You're living in Olam Hazeh. The physical world is Muchsuk here. So, a hard table, a geshmak, a piece of food, right? All those things, those are real to us. When somebody talks to you about ruchnis, what's ruchnis? Show me ruchnis. One time in my life, let me feel ruchnis. If I felt it, maybe it would be different. But if I'm talking to the Rebbeinu Shlomo, I don't know what ruchnis is. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to feel it. So how could I daven to it? Every day, every morning, I have to get up at shacharis. I'm half asleep and I have to daven to what? So hard. How do I connect to it? I'm not even talking about the fact that it doesn't answer me. I don't hear an answer. I don't hear him respond. But I'm just talking about the fact that when you're talking to something that you don't understand, that you don't feel. Everyone here was told a million times in life, there's ruchnias and there's gashmias. Yeah, where's the ruchnias? You have a neshama in you. Where's the neshama? Where is it? In which part of your body? It's in your little toe? It's in your ear? Where's the neshama? I don't feel it. It's a very difficult thing, very difficult for it. I once had a conversation with a boy. I think I was in high school at the time, and they asked me to learn. There was a program in New York called JEP. They asked me to learn with a boy that wasn't religious. I think he was like 12 years old, something like that. And I used to go to his house and kind of tutor him. His parents wanted me to tutor him in Hebrew, I think, or Yiddishkeit. I don't remember exactly what it was. But this kid was like not a believer. He was very proud of the fact he was not a believer. And he wasn't buying anything. I was no rabbi, I was just a kid. But I was supposed to learn with this kid, and you know, they used to pay me a little bit of money every once in a while. I used to learn with the kid. And he wasn't interested. This was making the parents feel a little bit better that they weren't giving their kid a Jewish education. He was in public school. I used to learn with him. So one day I finally decided I'm gonna ask him, so what you know, does he believe in God or is not? Nope, he doesn't. Chas v'shalom. He said, nope, I don't. Nebuch. I don't believe in God. Why don't you believe in God? So he said, I don't believe in anything that I can't see, hear, feel, touch. I don't believe in anything like that. That's what he said. I don't believe in anything like that. Right? So I think I mentioned this to a bunch of you guys. So I said to him, really, that's what you don't believe in anything you see. You don't see, hear, feel, or touch. So have you ever touched light? So he said, no, I never touched light. So I said, but you believe in it, right? He said, well, I could see it. I said, okay, do you believe in air? So he said, yeah, I believe in air. I said, have you ever touched air? Have you ever seen air? Have you ever seen it? I said, well, I could see the trees moving. That's not air, it's wind. But can you ever see it? So he started saying to me, you know what? I said, have you ever felt or touched or seen an idea? How about, like, let's say, happiness. Have you ever touched it, felt it, seen it? You don't believe in things that you can't touch and feel. You know that there are things that you don't touch and feel and see, but you still believe in them. So I said, that's a very juvenile point of view. But you know the truth is, that's what we all say also. We all say that same thing. If one day HaKadosh Baruch Hu would come and talk to me, after that I would never have another question. I'd be able to daven for the rest of my life every single day. No problem, because I connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but I have never done that. I've never done that. What I wanted to do, there's no time left, but what I wanted to do is give you a few examples of times that you have touched Ruchnius. Some of them you might agree with, some of them you might disagree with. But I just wanted to point out to you that there are a few times in your lives, every one of us has touched Ruchnius. Not emotion necessarily, but Ruchnius. You've touched it. And if you focus on that a little bit, it might help you through those difficult times. A human being in general has a drive for something that's beyond him. That's the beauty of Yefes. Yefes has a drive for something that's beyond him, but he makes it artsy. He makes it into art. There's nothing wrong with art. Art is very beautiful and very meaningful, and you can give a lot of messages that way. But it's a person trying to reach something beyond the physical, make it beautiful. Beautiful doesn't mean just that something beyond the physical, but it's not Ruchnius. So that's the shortcoming of Yefes. Cham is not interested in anything. He's only interested in his body. Yefes is interested in something a little bit beyond himself, but he never gets to Ruchnius. He stops at emotion. But a Yid is supposed to get to Ruchnius. Yid is supposed to get there. There's nothing wrong with Yefes. Yefes is good. He's geschmack. It's right. He's right. He has something special. That also has its place. But it's not Ruchnius yet. What's Ruchnius? Where have you touched Ruchnius? I don't think there... I don't want to make any big statements, but I think most of the people in this room, if not every last person in this room, when they sat at Yom Kippur and Shul, there was a point in Yom Kippur and Shul where you felt that Ruchnius. Everybody at a different place, maybe it was during Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad at the end, maybe it was Shema at Shacharis, maybe it was at Maariv, maybe it was at Baruch Hu at Maariv, maybe it was at Ne'ilah, maybe it was any different time. Somebody felt it someplace. Every one of us felt it. Some people maybe felt it for half the day. But you felt Ruchnius for a second, for a moment. There was a moment there. And you felt it. Do you know that the biggest atheists in the world, the people who believe there is no soul, people who believe there is no soul, when a parent of theirs dies, what do they do with the body? They either bury the body, maybe, unfortunately, they cremate the body, but they didn't throw the body in the garbage. Why don't they throw the body in the garbage? Sorry for being so morbid. Why don't they do that? Why not? Person's dead. He's gone. It's finished. It's over. It's done. It's finished. There's nothing left. Even they know there's something beyond the physical. Even the ones who deny it, absolutely, they know there's something beyond the physical. Can't just do that. Go speak to people, cynical people. Cynical people. Speak to them right after they had a child. Speak to them what it was like in the delivery room. Just about every one of them will tell you there's a God. What I just saw, a new human being being born, what I just saw, that was divine. They forget about it very fast. Very fast it passes out of their lives. But they know that. They touch Ruchnius from it. I would suggest that just about everybody in this room feels Kedusha Shabbos on a regular Shabbos. On a regular Shabbos in November, they feel Kedusha Shabbos. Shabbos doesn't feel like a regular day. It feels different. Don't think about it. Feel it. And you'll see that Shabbos feels different. Don't think. Don't use your brain. It's hard because men like to use their brains a lot. Women are better at feeling things. But feel it for a minute and you'll feel that Shabbos feels different than a regular day. It feels different. It feels different. Because you're touching Kedusha. You're feeling that. I hope everybody in this room, if they didn't have it already, but they will have it one day, I hope everybody in this room has a moment, hopefully you have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, but you have a moment where you learn a sugya and you hit the beauty of the sugya. You hit the vart, the lumdus, the kasha, which puts everything together. Everything you've learned so far now connects. All the lines are done. Everything's together. And you say, oh, that's unbelievable. Look at that. That'll never happen in anything except in learning. If you haven't touched that yet in your life, if you've never hit a moment, a wow moment when you're learning, then please hold on, because it will come. Push yourself a little bit, and it will come in learning. Well, you'll see something. You'll see a kasha, Kivegir's kasha. You'll see a lumdus from a Baruch Be'er. You'll see something, and you'll say, wow, there's something that's divine there. That's not pashut. That wasn't brilliant. That was something past brilliant. That was something beautiful. The goal is to take all those little things that you had, the birth of a baby, or the amazing sugya that you learned, or whatever it is, and to realize that a week from now I'm going to have forgotten about this. And I have to figure out a way to carry this along with me in my pocket for those dark winter days when I don't remember that anymore. But that we do connect to Ruchnius is very, very important. Now, it's an interesting thing. The Pasuk says over here, Shefech dama adam, ba adam dama yishafech. It's a Pasuk in Parshas Noach. You're not allowed to murder somebody. We're talking about abortion, whatever it is, but we're talking about murder. Shefech dama adam, ba adam dama yishafech. Why can't you murder somebody? Why can't you kill somebody? Most people answer the reason that you can't kill somebody is because human beings, I mean, you can kill an animal, right? Nobody, there's just nobody out there. There's no reasonable person out there that says that human beings and animals are the same. Just like you can kill an animal, you can kill a human being. There's almost nobody that's reasonable that says that. I mean, there's some people that like saying things like that just to get you annoyed. But there's nobody reasonably who says such a thing. Why? What's the difference between a human being and an animal? What's the difference? Most people will answer that the difference between a human being and animals is that human beings are intelligent. Human beings are intelligent. Animals aren't. First of all, I don't know about you, but I've met a few human beings that are not that intelligent. It's not that intelligent, right? And there's some very smart, orangutans, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, they use sign language and stuff like that. But they should know, in a serious way, there are a lot of human beings that aren't intelligent at all. At all. What about a human being in a coma? His brain is never going to work again. That's still a human being. What about a baby? Has never learned anything in their lives. Not intelligent. But they have that potential to be intelligent, but they're not intelligent. Why is that person different than an animal? But in the lumdus, the part of the category of human beings that are usually intelligent, what's the vart? The vart is that everybody knows and everybody understands that human beings are different because there's ruchnius there. An animal is physical, and a human being has a part of him that's not physical. And we understand that. That's untouchable. Everyone understands that. Everyone understands that. Some people want to make themselves not understand it, but everyone understands that. Everyone does. But there's something called ruchnius. Go into a Shabbos now and feel the ruchnius. Feel the ruchnius of the Shabbos.